You're listening to the Slavic Literature Pod, your shelf help guide to all things Slavic.
I'm Cameron Lalana.
And that would make me Matt Gerasimovich.
Theoretically, but we're looking into that. And today we are covering part two, chapter 35 of Vasily Grossman's Life and Fate. Approaching the Battle of Stalingrad. Can you believe after the book Stalingrad and into the second book, Life and Fate, in part two, chapter 35, we're still approaching the real, I mean, the battle's been happening this whole time, but like the really, all right, here's where we win part. Speaking of here's the part where we win, Lieutenant General Yeremenko summons our boys, Novikov, Getmanov, and Neudobnov to talk ahead of the battle to give them a little pep talk. And a little bit of a chastisement for complaining about things like, hey, what if the Air Force would stop bombing us by accident?
Right.
Yeah. Is there anywhere here that you'd like to begin?
Well, I think that most of the chapter, and this is a very short one, takes place between Yeremenko and Novikov. And Yeremenko's very kind of miffed that Novikov doesn't really seem to be appreciative of the compliments that he's bestowing upon him, mostly because he knows that he is known for being very stingy with his compliments. So he's very frustrated, seemingly that, surprised, you know, that Novikov doesn't seem to care. You can't quite grasp why he wouldn't care. So a lot of the drama of this chapter is just this mental sort of thing, which is maybe shouldn't be, but it is what it is. And I think the whole essence of the chapter sort of has like the same energy as if you were to go into a career fair, but everybody has a family member who knows the hiring manager. And that's basically what Novikov is going through, because Neudobnov and Getmanov are talking about all the, you know, sort of important people that they know in relation to the party, and there is this kind of understanding that is finally outright stated at the end of the chapter, where Yeremenko says, you know, like, they may know Khrushchev and whoever this other guy is, but don't forget that you're going to be the one that's actually leading the soldiers into the breach. Like, you're the soldier, and there is this understanding between the two of them. And I don't know if it was a particularly difficult chapter to understand, I would say, but that's what it was to me.
Yeah, right. No, I think that is really is what it is, where you have in this moment where Novikov is putting, like, take a step back and to the moment where Novikov is saying, like, hey, if you could, would you please inform whatever division of the Air Corps it is to, you know, adjust their coordinates and stop bombing one of my divisions by mistake? He's like, no. You know, up to this point, there'd be no injuries. And Yeremenko is like, what's his game? Like, does he have it in for the officer responsible? Is he trying to cover his ass? And we know Novikov. Novikov's like, he means what he says, which is, please stop bombing my men. But Yeremenko is like, got like a foot in both worlds here, where he's kind of playing the political game, and so he's like, he's getting way more into these calculations than Novikov is, which I think is an interesting little mental note to be making. But even then, when we go from there to, you know, kind of, and you know, Getmanov at the moment steps in, like, of course not, we would never, you know, impugn Stalin's Air Force. You can see even in these critical moments, Getmanov and I would imagine Neudobnov too would be doing the same thing to smooth over any potential political issues. And but even, which I think, you know, Yeremenko obviously exists in that world, but towards the end, when Neudobnov and Getmanov are naming off who they know, you know, Khrushchev for Tsion Petrovich, right? He like kind of cuts them off. He doesn't seem all that interested in them and kind of dismisses them, but still takes that time to remember, you know, to tell Novikov, don't forget, you son of a bitch, you're the soldier, you know. So yeah, I think your point stands. It's just, it's a thin chapter, but there's an interesting political nuance too. I think you get to see an interesting way in which each of these different operatives in the Soviet system would maneuver.
Yeah, but it's sort of a weird spot to be maneuvering, because you have people who are the high of the high of Soviet society, very, very high up within the military. And it's just kind of interesting to see the parallel differences between the Soviet side and the Nazi side, because a few pages ago we were talking about how that upper strata, that very, very high upper echelon of Nazi society, that was essentially where everything can be freely discussed. And yet at this quite high level, I mean, they're not all the way at the top, they're not Central Committee members, but there still is this almost performative type of political maneuvering when they should really be talking about military matters and how to not bomb their own troops, but instead they're worried about potentially being denounced as an anti-Stalinist and a fascist sympathizer and whatever else, just for daring to suggest that maybe their own air forces should not be bombing their own ground troops.
For sure, right. I guess that is an interesting differentiation here we have between Liss's categorization of, he calls it leadership, but at least in this novel, it really only seems to apply to Nazi leadership, where, as you say, it really just can't, the Soviet context just doesn't follow it, which is a pretty, I think, noticeable and meaningful difference.
Yeah, I don't know what to make of it at the moment, but yeah.
Right. Yeah, but I think maybe that's about all we had to say for today. This, you know, as you said, is a pretty light chapter.
What are you talking about? I could go on for hours.
Please, by all means.
No, I probably could, but I think you're probably right. We should leave it there.
Yeah, well, in that case, you will hear from us again soon.